Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How much would it take to knock you down from a middle-class lifestyle into poverty? And are you or your friends, family, and neighbors more vulnerable than it might appear? As KERA's Courtney Collins reports, as many as 4 in 10 North Texas residents may be just one crisis away from financial catastrophe.
What comes to mind when you hear the word poor? Do you think of homelessness and hunger, food pantries and free clinics? Now take a step back and think about the words asset poor. It's a term you might not be familiar with, but it could describe your best friend, neighbor, or sister.
This really measures the ability of a household to exist at the poverty level for just 3 months if their main source of income is disrupted.
Andrea Levere is the president of the Corporation for Enterprise Development, and the disruption she just mentioned could be anything. A layoff, an unexpected surgery, a loved one's legal fees after an arrest. Asset poverty doesn't necessarily mean you're getting public benefits, or someone in your family lost a job. Levere's colleague, Ida Rademacher, explains.
I think what the understory is about is if you do have a crisis, what is the financial cushion you have to fall back on?
And the answer for many North Texans is not enough to last more than 90 days. There are some specific issues plaguing our area. For example, thousands of Texans don't have bank accounts, so they spend hundreds of dollars a year cashing checks, loading prepaid cards, and making rent-to-own purchases. Another major problem? People who go without health insurance. Nearly 25% of Texans are uninsured, and as Levere explains, that can have a disastrous ripple effect.
So you don't have access to health insurance, you then have a major health incident, you then have to declare bankruptcy because of it, then your credit score reflects that, and you spiral down again.
As many as 40% of folks in Dallas are one crisis away, and Rademacher says fixing the problem is more than any one family can handle.
If half of the population really is one paycheck away from having to figure out a whole series of strategies, you know, to fix this gap, then that's a community problem.
And over the next several months, we'll follow families in our community. Families trying to recover from unemployment, survive retirement, beat back debt, and fight their way through a medical emergency. For KERA News, I'm Courtney Collins.
You can hear more of Courtney's reporting on this evening at 6:20 and learn more online about the One Crisis Away project at keranews.org. Joining us now to talk about the struggles of working families to build financial security and recover from crisis, we have two guests. Jennifer Ware is CEO of the YWCA of Dallas, which provides education designed to help people build financial stability. And Todd Mark is Vice President of Education for Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Dallas. Jennifer and Todd, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having us.
So if 40% of us are indeed one crisis away from significant financial problems, that suggests a lot of people who don't look vulnerable are vulnerable. I wonder how often you find people in need of your services who didn't realize they were vulnerable.
Well, sadly, at CCCS, it feels like the last 5 years we've been more like a crisis emergency room for finances, a critical community financial safety net. We'd much rather be doing, just like the YWCA, preventive work, but seeing a lot of people that were in crisis. And still today, even though the economy is on a track toward recovery, you do see people who've lost their emergency savings. Their credit is damaged, but they have nothing to fall back on whether it's a tire that blows out when you're driving down 75, whether it's a medical emergency, it's a cutback in hours. It doesn't even have to be a layoff. A divorce. There's so many circumstances that can throw your finances into crisis, and if you don't have financial resources to fall back on, it's a very dangerous place to be.
Well, let's talk about falling back on those resources, Jennifer, because many people who are barely getting by, who are covering all the bases, really don't feel like there's much left over at the end of the week or the month to save for a rainy day.
Absolutely. And for many people, there isn't that there isn't anything to fall back on. That's part of what we take time to look at. Each individual that comes to the YW for services is how do we develop that safety net? So let's look at what you're spending today. Let's look at things as simple as wants versus needs. Now, many of our women are dealing specifically with the needs. I mean, they're choosing between putting food on their table or paying to get a car fixed, to use Todd's example, or paying for health insurance or paying for their utilities. Those are difficult choices to make. But we try to really sit down one-on-one with each individual and help her figure out the plan that's going to work for her. Because I think what you'll find is there are some common things that we can do, but it's very personal for every single person. And we've really got to personalize that approach, if you will, to help people find the right solution for them.
And I suppose when a person is in crisis, there are priorities to be set and decisions to be made. If you can't pay every bill you have, what do you both recommend to people when they find themselves, let's just say, $200 short every month?
Sure. Well, when somebody comes to CCCS for crisis counseling, which we touched 66,000 people last year over 2012, we try to prioritize what all their objectives are, but we talk about their base living needs. That'd be housing, transportation, base utilities, food, necessary medical care. And I would call that your cost of breathing budget, things that you really can't do without. Mm-hmm. Everything else, they may be disposable, discretionary. They may be things that we don't want to live without, but we could. It's very difficult when somebody is struggling to say, forget all the wants. Do I choose between keeping the water on or the electricity?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe this is the month that I finally let the medical insurance go because I'd rather have food on the table. There are no easy choices. And by the way, when somebody comes to CCCS or the YWCA, that's not a matter of saying, we need to help you budget better. There's significant behavioral changes and really a way of restating their financial goals to bring back the stability they need.
I agree. I think that so it's interesting. You have two organizations that provide on the similar topic. So you'll hear a lot of yes,
agreed,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of comments. And I think the biggest challenge that we've seen really since about 2008 is the person that's coming to us or calling us for help for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really been difficult for people. We've seen people who are, bachelor degreed, who were double incomes, and one loses a job and then later another loses a job, and you think you've done everything right. And now what do you do? And I think learning how to help that person get used to that situation and feel comfortable asking for help when they've never had to do that is something that's been, we've been very sensitive to.
People have been very happy to hear that the unemployment rate is slowly dropping, and that is certainly a good thing. But it bears repeating, and I think Courtney alluded to this in her piece, getting a job again after a lengthy period of unemployment is like the first step, not the happy ending necessarily, to getting back on track financially.
Sure. Well, let's face it. The 7.2% national unemployment that's reported right now is not a very real number when you consider all the numbers of folks that have just fallen out of those reports,
mm-hmm.
because they've stopped applying for jobs. They've given up on employment. So if you think that we are closer to 9 or 10% unemployment and then you consider the underemployment, there's a lot of pessimism for folks. If you've been without a job for 6 months or 12 months, it's not just a matter of have you refreshed your skills. You may have had a hard time paying bills, which have impacted your credit report and score, which many organizations, especially if you're in financial services, they're going to be pulling your credit and they're going to say, sorry, because you didn't have a job and you didn't have a means of keeping up your bills, we can't offer you an opportunity now. So it's not just so much of do you have the right education or the skills or the network, but they may be a victim of what's happened during the recession, which perpetuates a time of crisis.
And I would say the biggest challenge and thing that I've seen in the Dallas community is nonprofits coming together. And nonprofits coming together. And Dallas hasn't always played nicely. I mean, we're all competing for that same dollar that's out there. But I think so many have stepped up and said this is a real issue that we need to confront. People have looked at the services they provide with a different lens. So if we were an emergency put food on the table lens, now let's start to think about asset poverty. Now let's start to talk about longer term solutions that are going to help you, because this is not a problem that you go to one organization and it's fixed the next day.
Mm-hmm.
This is your organization has to be willing, or the person that's helping you has to be willing to be there for a long time. Because as you said, just because you get that job doesn't mean that when you get your first paycheck, all your problems are done. This can take many years to unravel and get you back and get you confident and comfortable and back to a place where you're feeling safe and you've got that safety net available for you.
So for people who don't have savings to take them through a crisis, those who have access will say, well, you know what, I'll just have to put it on my credit card for this month or for a few months. And I think I would imagine for some people that's a viable solution. For others, it can get into, the debt can just grow and grow. And then there's the issue of payday lending, which also, I guess, if you don't have access to traditional credit, is the place a lot of people go. Can you both offer some perspective on both of those and what people need to be aware of?
Sure. Go ahead.
So many of the clients that we work with, first of all, don't have access to credit cards, or mm-hmm. if they do, their credit cards may be maxed out. So that may not be an option. We work very hard with the women that we're working with, getting them to develop their own and build their own savings account, small. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's $200, because $200 can help you get that car fixed or the flat tire or whatever it is that you need, and so that you borrow from yourself. We work really hard and advise against payday loans, because that can get you into a trap that you never get out of. The reality is, though, what is the alternative solution? What is that product that you can go out and access? And it's a really tough question. And unfortunately, I don't think that we've been able to come up with that solution. Todd and I are both part of a larger organization of banks and funders and nonprofit providers and community leaders that are working together to help address this issue. And unfortunately, all of the answers aren't there yet, and all of the services aren't available. But we're getting a lot closer to it in Dallas.
Absolutely. And you're right. Through United Way of Metropolitan Dallas and the Community Financial Stability Initiative that Jennifer and I are both a part of, it's really about collaborating and uniting resources across Dallas and helping people. But Chris, I think, back in 2009, after the recession hit, we're full tilt, CCCS started teaching a class called Recession Proofing Your Finances. And it was really aimed at analyzing all the resources you could fall back on in a time of crisis, which really is the essential definition of asset poverty. Once crisis hits, what are your resources? It's not will crisis hit you? It's if crisis did, what would you have to fall back on? And we would help do a waterfall of tiers of options. Ideally, everybody has emergency savings to fall back on. And let's face it, if we say a minimum of 3 months emergency savings and an ideally 6 months of emergency savings, well, that's going to take not months, but that'll take years to accumulate. Mm-hmm. And remember that even if you had 6 months of emergency savings put aside during the unemployment, during the recession, there was a 43% chance that you're going to go at least 6 months without a job.
Yeah.
So you'd still be without it. So then you say, what else besides savings? And we look at people's access to credit. Many people have been thankful they did have access to credit to borrow their way until they got a job. It's looking at equity in a home. It's looking at a 401k or a retirement. And by the way, these are not things that we would recommend. We're not saying hawk your house or borrow from retirement. But when you're unemployed for 12 months, it's not about saying, well, I'll have a great retirement as long as I can get through my period of homelessness. You know, it's saying, what resources do I have now? That's why so many people, they didn't think about family and friends, and they think about the easiest solution, which in many cases would be a payday loan. And they're just saying, what's the quick fix? And I'll worry about the ramifications later. And that's why we think that financial stability and having savings, having a plan, a contingency plan, is so critical so you don't make bad choices.
You all both work with people at sort of different ends of, mm-hmm. of this issue, but I wonder if it's been your experience that people tend to wait too long to come and ask for help or guidance.
Certainly, the time to seek help is immediately. The moment you feel you're facing crisis, even as a HUD housing counseling agency, when people lose their job, we say, don't wait until you're 30 or 60 days behind on your mortgage. Call when you're facing imminent default. Mm-hmm. The sooner, the more options you have available. And as a debt counseling agency, we would much rather talk to somebody when they're 3 or 5 in the hole than 30 or 50 in the hole, where their options are much more difficult in getting caught up.
We're speaking this hour with Todd Mark, who is Vice President for Education for Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Dallas, and Jennifer Ware, CEO of the YWCA of Dallas. They are both here as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. We'll come back to the conversation and answer your questions and emails at 1-800-933-5372 and think@kera.org.
funding for THINK comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this January to design your own Master's of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Human Rights, Creative Writing, and others. More at smu.edu/MLS.
We're in our 20s with the home, with, you know, son on the way. We were, you know, flying high. So the last thing I would have thought about was, oh, I'm getting sick.
That was Isaac Madrid, whom Courtney Collins is following for her One Crisis Away series. This evening at 6:20, you'll hear more from the Madrid family on KERA News. And you can see video of the Madrids right now at keranews.org. We're speaking this hour as part of our One Crisis Away initiative with Jennifer Ware, who is CEO of the YWCA of Dallas, which provides financial education, and Todd Mark, Vice President for Education for Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Dallas. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Jennifer, the situation that Isaac mentioned is something that a lot of people find themselves in. They become ill. Sometimes they can't work at all, or they simply have really large medical bills. And this is not something you can, you know, it's not something you can solve with a second job. Or what sorts of preparations can people do, knowing that eventually most of us temporarily could find ourselves in a place like this?
And actually, I was thinking about that story. It really resonates. Because one of the services that we provide is around breast health care for women who are uninsured or underinsured. And we had a woman that just kind of sometimes you meet someone and they stick with you in your heart. And Allie was 55 and a laid-off school teacher from Irving ISD. And she had to make that choice between paying her utilities or paying for health insurance. And she had always been healthy, so she picked her health insurance. I mean, picked utilities, I'm sorry. And then stage 2 breast cancer picked her. And she really had to go through that whole treatment and diagnosis. And she was fortunate because she found the YWCA. But she told us before she'd found us, she sat in a room with her shades drawn and she just prepared to die. And so fortunately, we do have currently a community health-based system. It's complicated and it's hard to navigate, but there is some help and some resources out there. The flip, though, side is preventing that is really difficult. And I think that's part of why, not to change our topic, but the Affordable Care Act, we hope, is going to be a resource to people like this who can't afford to pay those extraordinary premiums, especially when you lose your job and your COBRA payments are enormous amounts of money, that we're hoping that there's going to be some other alternatives in the future. I mean, now you've got, though, to connect with the right resource that can help you get through that process and manage that process. And they are out there. We've just got to find them.
And, you know, it's so critically important. You can never prevent a crisis. We don't know if we're going to be in a car crash. We're going to get a bad diagnosis from the doctor. When you find out that your spouse is cheating on you or you lose a loved one, you can't prevent those things. So it's not a matter of how do I avoid them. You say, how are you prepared both emotionally and in these cases? We're talking about financially. And so certainly you can't prevent a diagnosis of cancer, but you can make sure that you've got appropriate health insurance and ideally whatever you can afford. But making sure that doesn't say, do I contemplate bankruptcy or my life? The same with any crisis. If it was a loss of a loved one, do you have savings or do you have other means of support of fulfilling that income if that income was lost? Do you have a family support or through your faith-based community? Where would you fall back on if you were hit with something? If you were in a car wreck and you not only lost your car, but you may not be able to work for a while. Do you have short-term or long-term disability insurance that will cover your income? Those are the kind of things that we can do proactively to avoid the financial mess tied to some of these crises that we just simply can't control.
And I would add to that part of what the Corporation for Enterprise Development talks about. We heard from Andrea and Ida in the beginning piece, and that's one of their big elements to financial economic security, which is not just the education and the assets and the tools that you need, but really having that foundation of support and being prepared through different types of insurance. And it's a household, what they call their household framework, and something that we look at and utilize in our programming, and that I think the city is really looking at how do we provide that kind of stability among programming for people.
Our society has become increasingly comfortable with sort of pointing the finger at people who find themselves in crisis and saying, well, you must have done something wrong. I wonder how much work both of your organizations have to do to tell people it's okay to have asked for help and that they're not going to face blame necessarily. And I recognize that there may be individuals who need to change some behaviors, but can you talk a little bit about that and whether that's changed over time?
So I'll jump in on this one, Todd. So I would say that for our clients, part of it is understanding the culture, understanding the background of where people are coming from. But other parts of it are just education. You know, if you're working and you're making minimum wage, you're working, you're doing what you're supposed to do, you have a job, you're still living at below the federal poverty level. So I think it's helping people understand that someone can be doing all the right things, and it's just not quite enough. Mm-hmm. It's just the reality of the world in which we live in right now, and leveling that. And especially when we look at the greater divide in the middle class and the middle class really shrinking and more people falling into poverty that weren't anymore, it's a challenge. It's something that we're going to have to look at. It's clearly a systemic issue that maybe we can solve it in the next 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
You know, at CCCS, we kind of differentiate between situational debtors and behavioral debtors. Mm-hmm. Not that you want to say some people have guilt and others have no blame, but it's a matter of if you've gone through a divorce, a layoff, a medical catastrophe, a death in the family, heck, impacted by a fire or tornadoes that have come through Dallas the last few years, that's very different than saying I'm somebody that lives $500 beyond my means every month and I just can't control myself, or that I'm a shopaholic. And we see both. Mm-hmm. Certainly during the recession, it's 95% of bad things that have happened to good people. And so it's not just financial counseling, coaching, and education we do, but it's also the emotional soothing of the psyche that says, I'm not to blame, I'm not at fault, or that I'm not worthy of the support or benefits that are available to me. As Jennifer said, we're dealing with a lot of folks that have not used to tapping the social services sector, that are not used to asking for help, that are not used to saying, oh, there's actually resources that help me when I'm going through a crisis like this. So it's getting past that stigma of I'm not poor in their mind, what we define poor as, so I don't qualify for that sort of support. And getting beyond an issue of blame, don't blame yourself, don't look backward, you can only look forward.
And I think that's where I think the benefit screening is really important. And one of the resources that we do have available is our YW self-sufficiency calculator that helps you look at your income and expenses on a monthly basis and then determine 9 different government benefits for which you might be eligible, like food stamps or child care assistance, as well as 3 tax credits. We've had so many people that we've screened that never before thought they'd be eligible for something like food stamps. And we look at it as not the solution, but it's the solution that gets food on your table today, and then we'll talk about the steps that you need. And so it's encouraging people to take advantage of those short-term solutions, because the one thing we haven't talked about in poverty, it's really that common thread issue that also links to kids not doing well in school and issues within your community. It's so much broader. Mm-hmm. That we've got to really kind of step back and help out where we can in the short term.
I looked online, Jennifer, at that calculator, and one of the questions that surprised me was it said how many, I think it was adults, share your kitchen. And talk about why that definition matters.
That's funny. When we were having this built out, so we had to have some people develop this for us because there's all sorts of back-end metrics. And they brought up that question, and I said the same thing. I laughed. And it's because determining eligibility is based on the numbers of adults that live in your household. Mm-hmm. And that was the easiest way. What I like about the calculator and how it was designed is it's customer friendly. And it's, if you looked at it, you probably saw that there's no way to get online and do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many nuances to applying for benefits. And so you really need to be talking back and forth with someone. But the other piece to it is, as you're having those conversations, you also learn other things that come out. So it may be in the context of the conversation of the benefit screening, it's not unusual that we might find out about a domestic violence situation. Mm-hmm. Or when I get home today, there will be nothing to eat. And so we've got a whole pool of resources that we've put together that we help people get what they need immediately while you're waiting for that. Because the other element is that applying for benefits is usually done from 8 to 5, mm-hmm. Monday through Friday. And if you've got a job, it's really hard to get off to go down and apply. Right. And so what we're telling people is, based on the information you've provided, this is what you could get, and it may be worth your while to go ahead and take that chance.
How poor do you have to be in Texas to apply for a lot of these benefits?
And rather than saying poor, I think it's a matter of need.
How challenged? Forgive the artless term.
No. But well, you know, there's various levels of support and need, and whether it's getting utilities assistance from a local nonprofit, or whether it's are you going by sex and age guidelines for low income or low to moderate income, for whether you qualify for, you know, whether it's health or whether it's food or other assistance. Each program is different, but I wouldn't want to ever discourage people and say, oh, you make above a threshold, so you don't qualify. I would rather somebody come in, talk to a counselor at CCCS, talk to a benefits counselor at YWCA, and analyze what are all the resources that are available that they may not have even considered. Oftentimes somebody will say, do I qualify for this one benefit? And they didn't consider that there are six other resources that are available. And, you know, something that the YWCA and CCCS of Greater Dallas has in common is we are the only two agencies in Dallas that provide individual development accounts, match savings accounts, to help people that are trying to build up resources. And that's an area where some folks have said, well, how poor do I have to be to qualify? And I don't ever want people to feel limited in saying, oh, you don't fit in a very neat, tight box, so you don't qualify. But it's talking about what their needs are and what their goals are, because those are the programs we offer are really life-changing for those that engage.
And I'm glad you brought up match savings. It's something that we've been doing now for 10 or 12 years in the Dallas community, and it's a little bit off of what we're talking about for short-term crisis solutions, but it helps someone acquire an asset like post-secondary education, starting a business, or purchasing a first home. And so there are income eligibility guidelines, but more importantly, within that program are steps that you have to take so that you know how to take care of that asset when you do purchase that asset. And it's exciting to see someone who's lived in subsidized housing for 12 or 13 years and has been really scared to step out on her own, and all of a sudden she's found financial education, she's learned about the match savings program, she saved $1,000, our match is 4-1, so she gets $5,000 to put towards a home, and now she's in a home where she's making Thanksgiving memories and she's having Christmas, and her little kids have their very own backyard and they've got permanence in their neighborhoods. That's my favorite program at the YW, because that's where you really don't tell everyone else that works there. They also do good work. but that's when you really see someone's life change, because they've been able to work really hard and do something different for themselves.
Chris, ours is very different from the Y's, where theirs is toward asset building and acquiring a specific asset. We're really aiming at those that are defined by asset poverty.
Right.
And ours is different in that it's really aimed at the unbanked or underbanked who have little to no emergency savings put aside. And our AIM program is focused on establishing the role of just putting emergency savings aside. And if somebody goes through our IDA, it's a maximum match of $300 a year, but it's $25 a month deposited into a credit union savings account, and we'll match it just to try to – and not some sort of once a year, but every month a little bit, and get into the habit of building up savings so that when something does happen – you're not saying how can I cover this, or you're scrambling to charge it or to borrow from friends or family, but you've got something to fall back on. And we think that's a great carrot incentive, especially for those that are unbanked. It's not just putting it in a cookie jar, but it's actually putting it in a federally insured a responsible financial institution.
Let's talk about that term unbanked, because I think there are probably people listening who haven't heard it, who can't imagine not having a bank account and how you get by. First of all, why are some people not signed on with a bank? What would keep them from doing that? And what are the disadvantages of saving your money in a cookie jar?
So some of the reasons that we see people not being banked is they may not be citizens of the United States, so they don't feel like they have the right documentation to do that. It may be something that...
Excuse me for interrupting. Is that true? Is it not easy to get a bank account if you are not a U.S. citizen?
It's more challenging, but several of the banks have come together through the Bank on Dallas initiative and come up with some much simpler solutions that you can have, a matricular card, for example, and you can get a bank account. For others, they may have had a bad experience. So one of the things we haven't talked about is financial education. And you don't grow up just knowing, kind of like you don't grow up knowing how to be a parent.
Right.
You don't grow up just knowing how to be financially savvy. And so for many, it's I had an account and I didn't know how to manage it. And I got, you know, too many bounced check fees and my fees were so high. Now I can't get an account.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might be another issue, not knowing what to expect. And really, banks are not customer friendly in some cases.
Yeah.
For those who are not comfortable with banks, let me put it that way. It may not feel as warm and inviting as it feels to walk into a payday lender mm-hmm. who knows your name and knows everybody in your family and your neighborhoods and makes you feel really welcome. And so when you don't have a bank account, then how do you save? Where do you go to a check cashing service and you pay maybe 8%, 5%, 10% to get your check cashed, as well as you're paying to get money orders to pay bills. And if we're talking about budgeting and saving and putting $25 away every month, how do you do that if you don't have a mechanism or a means to do that? Mm-hmm. That's really the biggest piece, I think, about being unbanked.
Yeah. And you know, not only is it first-generation Americans, and let's face it, a good percentage of Texans are new to the American credit system, the American banking system. There may be a lack of trust from coming over. But let's face it, there's a lot of Americans that had a lack of trust in the big bank financial institutions during the recession and due to bailout and TARP programs. And I think it's part of educating and saying, listen, it's always better to be with a responsible financial institution than not. Going to a check cashier or a payday lender is not a better alternative. And one of the big issues I think we see here across Dallas is as a certain pocket, there's certain zip codes where you don't see the names that you may know or trust in financial institutions. And if you grow up there and you think, well, my bank, my credit union is actually defined as a payday lender. It's a check cashier. And that's all they know. So it's getting access. And for those that may not have transportation to go, and I know that's hard to think. I'm sure we think, don't you see the same financial institution every mile a marker? But there's some zip codes that you don't see them in.
Right.
So making sure that people have access and knowing what a legitimate financial institution can mean for them and saving them in the fees and costs of traditional banking.
I think you also bring up an interesting piece, which is we as nonprofit providers are not going to be able to address every single issue. I mean, you know, for a woman with two kids living in Dallas County, according to the Center for Public Policy Priority, it takes about $43,000 a year to provide for her family.
Which is like $21, $22 an hour, mm-hmm. which
right.
is a lot.
Right. And the average job in Dallas pays about $17 an hour. Mm-hmm. So again, going back to working and trying. So we know that we can help a woman get herself so far. She doesn't. We don't help her get herself so far. But then where we have to step off and step up is in the public policy arena. So when the non-banking, in terms of non-banking, for example, what if our legislature said, OK, now we're going to require that all corporations go to direct deposit? Mm-hmm. Now people have to figure out how they can get bank accounts. So there's some ways we're going to have to expand our thinking and look towards advocacy to make those changes for people.
We're speaking this hour with Jennifer Ware of the YWCA of Dallas and Todd Mark of Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Dallas as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can call 1-800-933-5372 to join us or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this January to design your own Master's of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, human rights, creative writing, and others. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative with Todd Mark, who is Vice President of Education for Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Dallas, and Jennifer Ware, CEO of the YWCA of Dallas, which provides financial education. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Are there alternatives for people who would be okay if they could just have $300 to fix their car between now and next Tuesday? Is there anything other than a payday loan or hopefully having a brother-in-law that can front you the money?
There are some credit unions that are looking at small dollar loan products that they can reach out to. But the interest rate is still higher than we would like, but mm-hmm. it's significantly better than the 500-800% interest you'd have to pay with a payday loan. So there are some alternatives. I think we have to continue to look at those resources, and that's part of the Community Financial Stability Advisory Committee is kind of working on that, and we're continuing to have those dialogues.
And of course, we don't ever want somebody to get to the point where they need a payday loan. So if you've got access to credit, it's not maxing it out. You want to have the available credit when you need it. You also want to have a contingency plan. And have you ever talked about, do you have friends or families? It's a neighbor. It could be somebody you pray with. Who's got your back? And if it's something as simple as $300, you may be surprised how many people you could actually ask. And it doesn't have to be a parent or a child or a sibling, but that could come through. And they would much rather help you than see you go to a payday lender. Now, let's face it, payday lenders exist because they fill a role that a lot of traditional financial institutions don't offer.
Yeah.
And as Jennifer said, there are a few credit unions that have started to get there. But rather than saying I don't want to say nobody should ever get a payday loan, I'd say I don't ever want anybody to ever need that. And ideally, they have the resources in place so that they don't have to fall back on that. And if that's emergency savings and having those contingency plans, that's the best preparation.
Todd, what do you want people to look at before they dip into their retirement savings? And I'm talking about tax-protected retirement. And
sure.
I recognize asking this question that many people don't have anything put away. But for people who do and they've been unemployed for a while, what do they need to think about before they make that step?
Well, and that's part of what we do with our credit counseling is we'll go through what are the best of the worst case scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, just like a payday loan, we would never say, oh, these are great ideas. But we would do a financial analysis. So
yeah.
If you're looking at pulling out money from a 401k, you're obviously putting aside your long-term financial goals of retirement for your short-term needs. And then you say, well, what's the cost? There's a 10% fee plus the taxes that you're going to owe. So we can help calculate based on their tax rate, is there going to be a higher cost of borrowing from a 401k or trying to refinance or pull equity from a home or a credit card? Some people often think, well, their credit card is the easiest and most convenient. And if they've got a high interest rate credit card, it may actually be cheaper to borrow from one of their other assets.
Hmm.
Now, again, we ideally don't want to promote anybody pulling equity from a home, pulling out of their retirement. But there may be, during a time of crisis, you do a financial triage of saying, what's the cheapest way? What's the first step that you should take rather than the easiest step?
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the line now to Michael in Dallas. Hi, Michael.
How you doing? I had a comment when it came down to the why people do not have banks. You know, I own a car wash and several car washes, and, you know, we're trying to switch over about 27 employees over from, you know, checks only to direct deposit, and we noticed that a lot of them did not want to go to get a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
But the main reason was because, you know, there's risk. It's more of a risk aversion for them for, you know, things that they've done in the past, which is, you know, child support from, you know, tickets to all these other things that they didn't want, you know, to add their Social Security with, to say that they'll go into my account and they'll take the money from me if I put in that account. So they felt as if you put in the bank account that if they add, you know, with them having their Social Security added on to that, that that'll be an easy way for anything that, you know, that they've had in the past, you know, to be tracked through there to, you know, for them to take. You know, a lot of that had to do with maybe 90%. Child support. A lot of people who had child support did not want to get bank accounts at all because they feel as if that's going to be the main way that all the money is going to be lost and gone. And also with a lot of, you know, Dallas promoters and Houston promoters, party promoters, do not get bank accounts because they feel as if since they're, in the cash flow business that, you know, if the, you know, taxes, you know, will be taken out from there.
Well, let me stop you there, Michael. You put a lot on the table. I'm guessing neither of our guests recommends cheating on one's taxes or shirking one's child support
no.
obligations. But maybe you can offer some perspective on what Michael had to say.
Well, first, Michael, I want to congratulate you on trying to be a champion for your 27 employees at your car washes of trying to help them set up bank accounts with legitimate financial institutions, whether that's a credit union or a bank. That's a big positive step for them. You know, there are reasons why somebody may not want to become part of the mainstream banking system. And you're right. That's an ethical dilemma that some people may face. You're not going to say, well, don't get a bank account so you can get away from supporting a child. I don't think anybody is going to be supportive of that or saying, how can I shield my money because the IRS is after me or I've got a lien. So I don't want anybody to know about the assets I have. That to me is not necessarily the best reason for saying I'm going to stay unbanked. Ideally, you're not getting yourself into those situations in the first place. But there may be reasons. There may be others that just simply have a lack of trust of the financial institutions. It has little to do with their own obligations. So addressing that individually with your own employees, I think, is a great step of saying how can we make this easiest for you to get direct deposit.
Divorce is a real blow, and I think you've both dealt with clients who have to sort of figure their way through this. What are the best ways people can, assuming that their heart is to be equitable, but protect themselves while not necessarily leaving the other person with no resources?
Well, at CCCS, we do a dealing with divorce class, which some people use as a first step toward the process, and oftentimes it's helping them create an escape fund. Literally, if somebody's in a bad situation, they're in an abusive relationship, and they don't know about shelters, transitional shelters that they can go to because they fear for their safety. Mm-hmm. But putting together the financial resources so that they can get out. Too many women we see, and I know that's the Y specialty, mm-hmm. we see too many women who stay in abusive relationships because they feel they couldn't financially support themselves. And, mm-hmm. and to us, there's another way. There's a better way. Now, for those that are going through divorce, in the midst of the process, it's talking about legal resources, and if that's working through Legal Aid of Northwest Texas or seeking pro bono resources to get through that and protect their assets, finding out what's fair and equitable. That's why we're a big advocate of collaborative and amicable divorces rather than somebody going for the other's jugular and wiping out resources for one, especially if there's kids involved. You're not going to want to say, well, I get the house, but every other weekend my kids will go in a homeless situation. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you're doing something that's fair and equitable for all sides. So, but figuring that out, for us, the biggest concern is people that don't separate their finances post-divorce. You got to remember that no matter what a judge says during a divorce decree, it does not supersede the original agreements. It's what a judge says is more about possession. It's not about liability. Joint credit cards or a mortgage in both people's names, maybe the judge says you get the house, but 5 years later the house goes into foreclosure, it kills both people's credit. Mm-hmm. If one person has a credit card open that's in both names and they rack it up, guess what? Those collections are going to both people. So we say, if you're going to go through the divorce, how do you financially protect yourself so that you don't have further ramifications and consequences?
And so I think for us, since our services are a little bit different, we might come at it at a different perspective, which is if someone's involved in our financial coaching program, which we have, coaching is a little bit different than counseling. Coaching is more client-directed. So a client sets her goal and you help her create her roadmap to get there versus counseling, which is going to be a little bit more directive of these are kind of the steps that you take. So when it comes down to a specialty issue like how am I going to handle my divorce, then we are going to refer out mm-hmm. to another organization to handle that. But we certainly have the women that we see that have said, I'm not going to argue with my husband over the credit. Literally, I was talking with a coach the other day, and it's that same thing. We've got a woman that wants to start a business, but she can't yet until she cleans up her credit that her husband racked up. And so we're working with her on her plan to do that. I think you also, Todd, talked about domestic violence situations. Again, I think these are just great examples of how organizations have to come together. You know, I expect those domestic violence organizations in Dallas to be experts at treating that, helping that woman go from being a victim to being a survivor. I don't expect them to be completely knowledgeable on asset building strategies. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really come together and we bring our services into 50 and 60 different nonprofits across the Dallas County area and bring in at no cost all of our financial empowerment services so that they can keep their resources directed at what they do best.
Is it your observation that nonprofits are having to do more now as government services in some cases have been scaled back?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody has felt the demand, and certainly those that provide crisis services, those that are providing, you know, the food banks and shelters and all of those crises. You know, we're a step above the crisis, so we're in a different position, as is, I think, CCCS, but everyone else has been very tapped.
And by the way, not only do we both serve as critical community financial safety nets, but as you talk about what's going on nationally, we also get, if there's federal dollars that support it, we're also concerned about the diminishing dollars to support proactive, you know, if it's housing counseling or rental counseling, or homeless counseling. And we want to make sure that we can always provide those services for free to the community. So this should never be a cost barrier for somebody that's coming for counseling, education, or coaching from any or either of our programs. So,
let's go back to the phones now. We have Jenna on the line in Allen. Hi, Jenna.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a comment about my personal experience. Several years ago, my husband was unemployed for 9 months, and we basically lived on our credit cards while he was looking for a job. and we ended up with $35,000 in credit card debt. And even after when he started working, we stopped using credit entirely. And even after a year, we hadn't moved the principal at all. We were paying $13,000 a year just in interest. Hmm. And we made the decision to cash in my IRA. And even with the penalties and the taxes, we would basically be back to even after a year and a half, because we just didn't see any other way out of it.
Any thoughts about that?
Well, and hopefully, Jenna, you use nonprofit resources. Certainly, that's probably what CCS is best known for is crisis and debt counseling and helping people analyze whether it's better to pay off on their own, to consolidate, whether they're doing settlement, negotiation, whether they're considering legal options like bankruptcy. Jenna, in your case, you are in an ideal situation where you had resources to fall back on and you wanted to immediately get rid of the stressor and say, I can eliminate this. Yes, it liquefies some of my assets, but I also get rid of the liabilities and I don't have that hanging over. So obviously that was probably what was best for you. And so anybody facing that scenario, that's a very common question that people come to CCCS with and will help them weigh. I bet many people wish they had that IRA to fall back on, Jenna. So most importantly, we're glad. Hopefully your husband is back to work and you're back on stable financial ground.
As we close up here, I want to talk a little bit about, we've spoken about individuals and the services that you provide to individuals, but as a society, as we are recovering from one of the toughest financial periods in our history, what can we do societally to get ourselves ready for the inevitable next time that we face a kind of collective crisis in the economy?
Great. Way to make us think on the last question. I mean, really,
that's the name of the show.
That is.
You know, I think that we have to shift and really start to look at people's financial capability. Mm-hmm. And as a society, I mean, this is a systemic issue, whether it's generational poverty or people that are one crisis away and fall into poverty. We've really got to pull back and look at what some of those best practices are and those innovative things that are happening all over the country. And I think even as Dallas, I'm going to take it from the country to Dallas. Mm-hmm. As the city, we need to step up and say in our community, we want to be one of those people that affects change. So if this happens again, our residents will be in a better position to handle it.
Couldn't agree more. You know, at CCCS, we do a lot more intervention work than we want to. We would much rather be like the YWCA, focused solely on prevention. And if we can get people thinking more proactively from a financial capability standpoint, and the definition, the difference between capability and financial literacy and education, it's not just knowing the skills, but it's putting those skills into action and having measurable impacts on your life. So if it's decreasing your debts, if it's building up your savings, if it's improving your credit score, building your overall net worth, those are the kind of things that will help prepare you for the future and make sure that you're not one crisis away.
Todd Mark is Vice President of Education for Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Dallas. Jennifer Ware is CEO of the YWCA of Dallas. They both joined us today as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. You can learn more online at keranews.org and see a video of the Madrid family, who the series will follow, and there will be a piece about them tonight at 6:20 on KERA. Jennifer and Todd, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for putting together One Crisis Away.
I'm just a little part of the team, but I'm happy to be part of it.
Thank you, KERA.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Christine McConnell prepares our podcast. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.